Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business. They'll set you up, make sure you are insured. They'll do everything they can because they know your budget is critical to find you the best price. And they will babysit that policy for you every step of the way. It's all with Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Lincoln Kia Hyundai, great pre-owned inventory, fabulous service department, all its Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Mark Wolgenrich in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day involving the SEC Special Teams Player of the Week.
The announcement being made over the public address system, number 32, Sarah Fuller, set to kick off for the Commodores. And here she goes, and here's the kick. It is kicked and squibbed down and recovered at the 35-yard line. And there it is, college football history. Vanderbilt's Sarah Fuller becomes the first female to play in a Southeastern Conference or a Power 5 conference game.
Slice of history. Doug Fisher with the call on the Vanderbilt Radio Network. As Sarah Fisher kicked off, she would have kicked more in the game, but Vanderbilt didn't score. And as I said back in August, when they said conference-only games for everybody, I said the coach that could benefit the most from that is at USC, Clay Helton, because they eliminated Alabama and Notre Dame from their schedule. I said he could benefit more than anybody else. I said the coach that was in the biggest trouble with a conference-only schedule was Derek Mason of Vanderbilt, and he got fired yesterday. Sarah is going to stay with the team, though. She's still there. Sarah Fuller, still there. She says, I'm going to stay here until they kick me out. Kind of like sounds like me on this show. All right, Mark Wolgenrich, SI.com, joins us. Mark, welcome. Always a pleasure. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Always appreciate it.
Mark, let's start with this. I started the show. I said, I want to start with what Penn State didn't do. Didn't turn the ball over. I mean, in the end, what does, at least temporarily, solving that domino mean to success?
I think that was the overriding factor. I mean, I look at that fourth quarter, you know, after Michigan scores a touchdown, makes it 20-17, and Penn State's got pretty much a full fourth quarter. They're playing with the lead, first time all year in the fourth quarter, pretty much. At that point, doing that, I mean, they did it a little bit against Indiana, but they were holding it.
Yeah.
And they went on this drive, this 75-yard, 12-play drive, I think it was, 10-play drive, converted a couple third downs. What if there's an interception or a fumble in there? You know, what if at that point your turnover rears its head? That, to me, was the biggest moment. I thought that drive was phenomenal. It was even in the back of my mind as I was watching the game going, God, this would be the worst time for the turnover to rear its head in this game, and they didn't do it. You know, it was a great third down completion, a couple of them to Jahan Dotson, but the one I think inside, they got him inside the 10, was a phenomenal, like, route-throw combination. Everything worked and protected the ball. It didn't seem like Sean Clifford was making, erratic decisions, but forcing decisions. The third down throw at the end of the first half, I mean, he could have tried to force a play in there, and he threw it out of the end zone. They took the field goal, and I mean, they probably winced going off the field, but it got them point instead of, something negative happening in the end zone. That was by far, to me, by far the biggest thing. I mean, they had given up 51 points this year after turnovers. And, you know, coming off a game when you give Iowa 24, basically, for turnovers to, you know, to flip that switch, not turn the ball over, and not give up any scores after a turnover, I think was all the difference.
Kevon Lee had 134 yards rushing in the game. What did you think of his patience and how he worked with his offensive line?
Both were pretty astonishing to me for a freshman, because I've seen freshmen, I'll even go back, like Saquon Barkley, as good as he was as a freshman, he had that tendency. I think maybe even that freshman running back tendency to try to go 75 yards in every play. And I didn't really get that from Kevon Lee. I saw him pause a couple of times. He did that, you know, that's the kind of thing that what Tony Hunt maybe used to do. And I thought, you know, saw Miles Sanders do it a little bit. He paused. He waited for something to clear. He kind of ran behind Caden Wallace really well. That outside blocking to give him that open lane on that, you know, the wide side, bright, you know, off in the short field, but that wide right side, he just kept taking it and taking it and taking it. And I looked down at one point, and he was over 100. And I was even a little bit surprised. I think it might have been the carry the 24-yard carry on that kind of ceiling drive that got him over 100. And I went, this is – not that it was a quiet 100 yards, but it just felt like he wasn't getting – it wasn't like he had a 60-yard run and then he averaged, you know, 1.8 over the next 18 carries. His yards came consistently, and I think that was really, really impressive for me to see out of him.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up Tony Hunt. I see some of what you're talking about, because I remember the day Tony Hunt won the job. It was a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. It was where the lacrosse field is now. That was an old grass field. Mm-hmm. Joe decided to do a 3rd-and-1 and 3rd-and-2 scrimmage. That's all they did. And it was Austin Scott, and Tony Hunt were the two running backs. And it didn't take a genius to figure out after a 15 plays which guy was going to be the starter. I know exactly what you're talking about. When you look at Penn State's ability over the years, Deshaun Hamilton, Parker Washington, this is something I don't get. Penn State has had the ability in the slot to exploit Michigan repeatedly.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it looks like Michigan, I mean, it even goes back to Graham Zug. All right. When Joe was the coach.
Right, yeah.
Zug had 3 touchdowns and 2 first downs on 5 catches that day when Penn State won out there. What is it about that? I don't coach, so I can't figure it out.
Well, I was wondering, I think I even tweeted at some point, got to get Jahan Dotson maybe more involved. And maybe that was just it. Maybe Michigan was just leaning so heavily on him. And I did watch. He did seem to be getting a little more man coverage. Maybe Sean was just looking and seeing, hey, you know, they're giving us Parker Washington. Let's take it.
Right.
Smart move on their part. And maybe that just goes back to the history. They're giving us Deshaun Hamilton. They're giving us Graham Zug. You know, let's take that spot. You know, you take what an offense gives you. And we've heard Kurt Chiraka say that. And they were giving him. I think they were giving the cushion to Parker Washington. But also, he was getting open. He was running. He seems to me to be a really advanced route runner for a freshman. Good steps. You know, it looks like he's, you know, if he's supposed to make a cut 6 yards down or 8 yards down or 11 yards, whatever it's supposed to be, he's cutting it there. He's hitting his routes on the right spots. And you can see that Sean trusts that he knows, oh, I'm supposed to throw a 10-yard route to him. He's going to be at 10 yards. That's his depth. He's not going to be at 12. He's not going to be at 8. I know that I'm going to be able to throw it to him there. And he catches the ball. He does everything fluid. I reminded, there's a little bit, maybe I'm seeing, of what Jahan Dotson did 2 years ago, too, that Jahan didn't make the kind of, like, astonishing plays that he's made this year, but he was so reliable 2 years ago, which is something they absolutely needed. With the injuries they had at receiver and having to move him outside and play alongside KJ Hamler, they needed that kind of player. And Parker Washington, you see, is developing into that, and I think exponentially is going to go from there.
I've already amplified for the audience over the past few weeks with Penn State on short yardage where I felt they needed to be better. Well, on third and less than four in this game, Penn State was 5 of 7. So I want to flip it to the other side, though. Michigan on third and less than four was 2 of 7, and then 1 of 3 on fourth down. What did you see from the Penn State defense that just seemed a little different to you this time through?
It seems like maybe just getting into gaps, you know, and not trying to go low on a tackle or arm tackle, getting into a gap, being physical, making a stop. After the game, Ellis Brooks was available, the linebacker who, with Shaka Toney, made that, you know, the fourth down stop. Right. Basically, that kind of sealed the game. And he said he noticed Joe Milton going from shotgun to under center. He felt it was going to be a sneak, and all he wanted to do was fill the gap. I think it's just even stuff as simple as that, because sometimes the linebackers, and you saw it early, were just kind of out of plays on some of the bigger on the bigger runs, especially Haskins' big run. They're out of, they're not in their gaps, and that's something that's just very seemingly simple as that. You know, fill a gap, get a body in front of somebody, you know, get a body in the way, and then, you know, Shaka Toney comes around and finishes it for you. But he got there. There was nowhere for Joe Milton to go on that spot, on that run. And that was another moment that you just kind of wait. Even though it was late, it was a 10-point, they were up by 10. After, you know, after the illegal batting penalty, which now I've seen some people, you know, dispute, they go, okay, maybe this is the point that something, you know, bad things start to happen. Because, you just get into that mindset. A bad thing is something bad is going to happen. And, four down stop, I wrote about it Sunday. I mean, I'm sure I wasn't the only one. Reminded me a little bit, in a way, of 2004 against Indiana.
Yeah, it was, yes. And I remember someone questioned me afterward. I said, I think this is a turning point. And he said, you got to be kidding me. And the same guy, to his credit, came out to me 4 years later and said, you were right. I gave him credit for that. I was like, oh, okay. Well, finally got one right. I mean, you throw enough darts out there, one hits the board, I think. Penn State last year at Iowa, 17-12 lead, back-to-back first downs with Noah Kane, and the offensive line closed it. Michigan last year, Beaver Stadium. Michigan's trying to put heat on them. Penn State needs a first down. K.J. Hamler, they get it and end the game. Saturday, there's 5:37 to go in the game, and Penn State gets the ball back after the aforementioned stop there. They never gave it up. What did that tell you? Never gave up the ball.
Man, a couple of those were Will Levis, weren't they?
Yeah.
Right, corrected, you know.
Yep.
That was, you go back, heck, did it again, you know, in the Fiesta Bowl, is it the same thing too? And you hadn't seen that drive. Well,
yeah.
You hadn't been in the position to make that drive this year. And that seemed to be an offensive line in a position now where it's feeling good about itself. I think it's feeling stronger, a little more comfortable, maybe play more together, that it's going to be physical and aggressive and drive block and give the backs, you know, give Kevon Lee and give the quarterbacks time and space to run. I don't think they threw the ball on that last series either, if I'm remembering it correctly. I think it was an entirely rushing series. And that's the kind of thing, you put away a defeated team at that point. Michigan certainly seemed like a defeated team at that point, but they had a couple of third downs. They could have made stops. Didn't get to it. So, as you said, never gave up the ball. That, to me, those two series, to finish with those two offensive series, if the fourth down stop is a turning point defensively for a defense that has struggled to get off the field, I think those two series, to score and then to four-minute yourself out of a game, maybe they're turning points for an offense that has moved the ball, but just has given it away just way too often.
So finally, I do have to ask you about the batted ball play, because Jack and I are watching it, and we feel like he batted the ball perpendicular or even slightly back. Okay, so it's a batted ball. So I just thought, and I'm normally pretty good on what the rules are because you have to explain this during the course of the broadcast. I hadn't encountered this before. I thought they were going to, if Michigan was going to keep it, they were just going to spot it there. But when they assessed the 10-yard penalty and they got a first down, I looked at Jack and I said, okay, on the, if you put every box of a team of what they could do wrong in a play, Michigan checked every one of them and got a first down.
The only thing is it's not a spot foul, but it's a line of scrimmage foul. Am I understanding that correctly? This is one of those things that I think the officials interpreted the rule as I read it. And again, I am so not in any sort of an official. They interpreted the rule correctly as it was read or as it's written. I just wonder about the necessity of that rule. Maybe situationally, you're trying to keep people from batting a ball out of the end zone,
or batting it forward. I mean that.
Right, exactly.
Batting it forward's the big part because of the Raiders Chargers thing years ago.
Yeah, and Penn State Ohio State. What in 18? Was it 18? There was a batted.
Yes.
What was that?
Yep.
And that was forward. I mean, there was no change of possession on that play that I remember, so there was no change of possession on this one. Right. That would just seem to be, I mean, what was his intent? What was Shaka Toney's intent? You can revisit the rule and address intent. Shaka Toney, all he was trying to do was keep that ball from going out of bounds.
I mean, right.
Clearly, he's not trying to advance the ball. So
right.
I guess in a literal reading of the rule, it was, I guess, correct. But maybe the rule needs to be, maybe the language of the rule or maybe some sort of interpretation of the rule needs to be contextualized a little bit because there was just no, he was not trying to kick the ball downfield
right.
To give Jason Oway another 15 more yards in which to run.
So you're telling me the team that blew up the offensive line,
right.
The team that flushed the quarterback out, the team that stripped the ball from the quarterback, the team that hustled and kept the ball in play, and the other guy that hustled that picked it up got penalized 10 yards for all that hard work at a first
down. Yeah, and a loss of down, right?
You could laugh about it.
Because I guess if it would have been a spot foul, it still would have been fourth down.
It would have been fourth down.
Yeah.
It would have been fourth down at that spot. You can laugh about it, you know, from the Penn State perspective because it didn't really matter in the outcome of the game, but I just thought it was I hadn't encountered that, so in terms of the 10-yard penalty, like you gotta be kidding me.
That was the thing that was inexplicable to me the most. It was like how did all this happen? Would they get a timeout back too? Is that gonna happen?
Yeah. So one team does everything right, the other team does everything wrong, and the team that did everything wrong turns out right. All right. So, okay, I got it. Welcome to Ann Arbor. All right. Thank you so much, Mark. Always
my pleasure.
A pleasure.
As always, Steve. Thanks
appreciate
again.
It, my friend. You bet.
Thank you.
Mark Walgenrich, SI.com. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Hey, the Eagles are playing tonight.
Yeah, and they're probably going to lose.
You're just so negative.
I'm just calling it like I see it. Especially if you're going to give Jalen Hurts more snaps tonight, because that makes sense.
Very quickly, the spikes and cross cutters are surviving. They will not be affiliates of the Phillies or the Cardinals, but they'll be a part of this MLB draft league, and it is as close to a model as we've seen over the last 15 years. And here's why. You're going to have players that are, for the most part, juniors and seniors in college, and the league, they're going to start playing. It's going to be a 68-game season, 34 home, 34 away. There are only going to be six teams in the league, which is really good. Mahoning Valley, West Virginia, State College, Williamsport, and Trenton right now with a fifth, with a sixth one to be named later. Trenton Thunder are moving from AA to this league. And the draft is going to be 20 rounds and in August. This league will be one of those, hey, look, I want to show you I should be drafted leagues. That's what it is, juniors and seniors, for the most part. And so it's close to the model that we've seen. And, you know, the model we've seen is players that just got drafted and are a long way from the majors. These are guys fighting to get in the draft. And that, I think, is going to be really a plus along the way for the model and what they're doing. All right, Jerry Dulac next half hour, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business. They'll make sure you're completely insured. They'll do everything they can to save you money, including bundles. And they'll babysit that policy forever. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Very pleased to be joined by Jerry Dulac, our good friend from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Steelers Network. Jerry, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Well, Steve, thanks. Happy Thanksgiving to you. A few days late. I'm glad to see at least one game was played up in Michigan and that there was a victory. And now I'm just waiting to see if there's going to be another game played tomorrow night.
Yeah, exactly. Because somebody asked me going into this week, they said, well, you got a basketball game Wednesday, you got a football game Saturday, a basketball game Sunday. How excited are you? And I said, every game you wait, you don't know.
That's right. That's right. And that's you just and that's the way, basically the way they are. I mean, it's more not so much a game as much as it is, okay, who's going to be available? Who might test positive? Who's available? And now it's, of course, with the extent of the outbreak on Baltimore's part, you know, what's going to happen with the game. And so, you know, the latest report is that the possibility of a cancellation is rising. I'm not exactly sure why that is. I know the league really doesn't want to get into that situation. And I mean, apparently, you know, for now, the spread seems to have stopped in Baltimore, but then maybe the league knows something else, and who knows? I can't imagine it has to do with weather, you know, which is tomorrow, but it's not exactly like they're predicting a crippling snowstorm. They're predicting possibly 2 to 4 inches. So I don't know how much that would impact it. But apparently, according to Adam Schefter's latest report, the possibility of a cancellation is rising, and I'm checking to see if that is correct.
Right, and we'll let you get back to that as quickly as possible here. But for the Steelers is supposed to be Thursday. That was Sunday. Now maybe it's a Tuesday. What's this been like for them? Because they're the ones that had to have the schedule changed and then play all those weeks in a row. They're the ones that now thought they might have a mini bye week, and now it's been extended like this. What's it been like for them to deal with this?
Well, I, Steve, it's funny. When the game was canceled or postponed, from Thursday, while it was disappointing to the fans and anybody who wanted to spend their Thanksgiving night watching that game, you know, you saw some players out on social media complaining about it. But the reality is, Steve, when they pushed the game back to Sunday, it actually was a benefit to both teams, but it was a benefit to the Steelers because, you know, you don't want to play Steelers-Ravens on 3 days' rest. I mean, it's the most physical, most vicious game in the league. Everybody knows it has been for years. It's the most intense rivalry. It's not dirty. It's just physical and hard-hitting. And that's not a game you want to play on 3 days' rest. So to get three more days to rest and prepare, to me, is a benefit to both teams. It hurts nobody. So to complain that the game wasn't on Thursday, aside from some disappointment, I didn't quite understand. And I think you're seeing that message come out now. Right. Postpone it again till Tuesday. Now you're just trying a team's patience. But I think Mike Tomlin handles these situations better than anybody. His message all along since training camp is you have to be able to adapt and be light on your feet as these situations arise. And that's what they'll do. And if the game is tomorrow, they will be fully prepared to play. There won't be any excuses. There can be none. They've had plenty of time to rest and prepare. And, you know, when you have veteran leaders like Cam Hayward and Ben Roethlisberger, guess what? The rest is only going to do them good. And so I don't see it being any problem in terms of playing or preparedness, but it probably tries their patience a little, but not to the point that it's detrimental. I mean, this is the world we live in. And I think, though, it's just easier if they play the game because now you're getting into maybe, you know, if there's no forfeit, which I just can't see that happening. Now you're talking about if they have to play, if they play week 18, then your final game is against Cleveland. Then you have to play the Ravens again. And then what happens if there's a week 18? Does the bye that you fought all season long for and put yourself in position to have, all of a sudden, is there no bye? Then that becomes unfortunate and, to a lot of people, I'm sure, unfair.
Yeah, I've really felt that the NFL, just a personal opinion, has done everything it can to avoid week 18.
No question. They want to avoid forfeits, and they want to avoid Week 18 at all costs. But now they've run out of bye weeks, so it's more difficult to navigate the schedule and fit games in, unless you start jamming them in, and I don't see that happening. I think the other alternative is, if you postpone it to if you need a Week 18, will the game matter to Baltimore? Will the game matter to the Steelers? And then even at that, that's unfair. It's unfair, but it would be the same for both teams. But now you're saying, okay, do we have a game or don't we have a game? So how do we handle the Cleveland game? Do we have another game we have to play? Do we rest our players? Do we use our players, our starters? It's a very ticklish situation, and that's why the league wants to play the games at all costs. And you saw what happened to Denver yesterday. And it's not about manpower, Steve. It's not about whether teams are capable of fielding a team. It's about health. It's about is there spread. And if you can't manage your team and your players and that virus runs through your locker room, that's an issue that you have to deal with. That's why they went to a 16-player practice squad. That's why they allowed you to have six veterans on the practice squad. And what happened with the Broncos, you heard their coach, Vic Fangio, even criticized their players for not being responsible enough to take care of themselves. And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, because I was just about to ask you about that, because these are two completely different circumstances, what's happening with Baltimore and the carelessness of Denver. But I felt in some ways and justifiably, by the way, that the league made an example at Denver to say, look, you're careless, you're still going to play.
Yeah, I think they wanted to send that message to everybody. The one thing I will say about the Ravens, where they are culpable, is I don't know how much it goes back to that trainer who wasn't wearing a mask, who wasn't requiring the players to wear a mask when working out, wasn't reporting guys who had, if they didn't test positive, had contact. So, you know, you can point to a person for being responsible in Baltimore for some cases, but I don't know if he's totally responsible for this outbreak. But nonetheless, it's extreme. It's worse than we saw in Tennessee, of course, which, you know, impacted the Steelers as well. So, you know, it's a strange case. But the last thing the league wants to do is, aside from a forfeit, is go to that Week 18, even though it just could be that they're forced into that.
Right, so let's get to the part about the level of play. The 10-0 at this point. You talked about the key veterans, like a Hayward, like a Roethlisberger. Expectations, as you know, are going to be natural. And, of course, pressure will build because they'll get a lot of questions about it. Now, the players haven't been through a 10-0. None of them have. But having veterans, did that help usually a team get through and handle success, in your opinion, based on your experience, Jerry?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, Stephen. You're seeing that message set forth. You know, the funny thing about this 10-0 start, now, what goes on in that locker room after a game, you know, we don't get to see anymore, of course, because we're not in there. But any public comment by any of these guys, even after the game, you would think there would be some smiles and faces of relief, excitement, jubilation. But Ben Roethlisberger, Cam Hayward, and any of the other veteran players have maintained straight, serious faces throughout. And I really don't think you can see the feathers of the canary sticking out the sides of their mouth. When they were 8-0, Cam Hayward said, hey, all that guarantees us is that we won't have a losing season. When they're 10-0, it says, well, okay, all that guarantees is we'll win more games than we lost. That's all. There are no guarantees with this team. That's the way they're looking at it. And their approach, I don't think they think they're a dominant team. They believe in themselves, don't get me wrong.
Right.
And I believe they are as equipped, both offensively and defensively, to play with any team in the league. Their defense is better than any team Kansas City has faced or will face. And so I'm not saying they'll shut down Kansas City, but if anybody can help contain them, it's the Steelers with their personnel. There is no question about it. So I think the players have handled it. Nobody's getting overly excited. You know, Eric Ebron being the exception. He talks about being 10-0 and unbeaten. He's never been that before. But the veterans who have been around have been very cautious about this and very straightforward, very focused and not taking anything for granted. And I think that message is it starts at the top and it works its way through Ben Roethlisberger and Cam Hayward, the two captains.
It's something if we're sitting here and saying, okay, when they play the Ravens for the first time, for example, you're impressed by seeing something like that. You and I both know in recent years when the Steelers have been in a position where they've been the prohibitive favorite, it's been a really good game, and sometimes they have not won that game. Did they show a level of maturity as to how they handled Jacksonville when they were the prohibitive favorite in terms of the mental and physical approach in that game?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that, Stephen. You could go back to the first four games of the year when the four teams they beat at the time were combined 3-15. And what says to me, and look, every team plays teams like that, has stretches like that where they play teams with inferior records. And so what it says to me is that the Steelers are a good team because good teams take care of business. Good teams do what they're supposed to do, and that's beat the bad teams. And so in those years when the Steelers lost to the one-win Raiders and the two-win Chiefs and the one-win Jets and the two-win Browns, those were teams that were 8-8 and 9-7. And they weren't 8-8 and 9-7 because of those games. They were those games were a result of being an average football team.
Right.
Those losses. And so that's why this team is 10-0. They're a good football team, and they take care of business. And they've beaten the good teams when they played them. You know, the only team since the 92 Redskins to beat three consecutive teams with one win or fewer. You know, this late into the season, week six or later. And two of those games were on the road. And so I think going down to Jacksonville, look what Cleveland did. Cleveland came within a two-point conversion of going to overtime with
That's
Jacksonville.
Right.
The Steelers are handling, after a slow, sloppy start, they dominate those teams. They dominated the Bengals. You know, and so now the Cowboy game was a different game. The Cowboys also have better personnel than those teams. They're just struggling,
right.
And they didn't have a quarterback. But the Steelers came back and won and did what they had to do. So, to me, Steve, that's a mark of a good team. And it's not a team that is prone to lose the types of games where, against teams they're supposed to be.
Jerry, always a pleasure. I'll let you get back to working on this story about the game on Tuesday night. And appreciate you very much, as always, my friend.
Well, Steve, it's always good chatting with you, as you know. And, I hope they play, and let's move on to another game, hopefully.
And, by the way, a belated happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well. So,
well, thank you. Same to you, Steve. Stay well.
Jerry Dulac joining us, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and also on the Steelers Network. And we will now see what's going to happen with that. We're going to see. It's all a mystery. To me, if you got 40 available players, you play. We know RG3's fine. So, play. But that's simple for me to say from 30,000 feet outside looking in. And the suit can't do anything about it. Because
if this happens again, he's going to pop his gourd.
As badly as he wants the Steelers to play, from what I understand, when it comes time to sit down to talk to Santa, his turn isn't until Wednesday, the day after the game. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Tonight is the debut of the Magic Radio and Talk with Santa. Someday, little Luke is going to be a part of this tradition, isn't he?
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Now, is he saying words?
More gibberish, but we're getting there.
I asked about Luke. I didn't ask about the suit. Is it that easy? Thank you. I'm back for the 7 o'clock show. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
Once again, quick.
You got to love the setup, baby. You got to love the setup. But tonight, talk to Santa. This is, we think, what, 80 years?
I believe that's correct.
Think of all the generations that have been a part of something that's actually pretty cool. It is pretty cool. Yeah. It's what, 4 to 8 years of age, I believe?
Yes.
They go in, they talk to the Magic Radio, and it's... I think it's the coolest thing on radio. Here's the reason why. I don't want us to lose our roots. Something that was really cool in 1940... was still really cool in 1960, was still really cool in 1980, was still really cool in 2000, and is still really cool in 2020. I love the fact that we do this. Because to me, it is that kind of... local radio to me has always been something where that connection happens between local audience, local radio station. Well, there's nothing that personifies that more than this. I think it's so neat. I really do. I just think it's so neat that we do that. But it starts tonight. Now, when's the last night? Is it the 23rd? The 23rd of December? Is that the last night?
Yes. I think that's what we usually do.
I got a note from Santa, by the way. And the note said something about, oh no, Wednesday the suit's with me. It says, it's not going to be more stuff about suit light, is it? Okay, I don't know.
I can't confirm nor deny.
Well, I wouldn't do the last part.
True.
I wouldn't deny it. Oh, the kid needs a break, Santa. Hey, our thanks, Jerry Dulac, for being on the show today, especially when he's trying to track down this story. He kept his commitment, stayed with us, because of nobody knows what's going on with the Steelers and the Ravens. Nobody. And still waiting to see that game is scheduled for tomorrow night. I mean, they're mulling a third postponement.
That is correct. And now I'm just seeing from Baltimore Ravens Athletic that they might consider Wednesday night to try and give it one more night.
Well, that's what I told you. I said, I wonder if they're going to go to Wednesday. And if you go to Wednesday, now the Ravens practice which was scheduled for this morning, the NFL canceled it. Now they're talking about snow being in the forecast. I mean, really, 2 to 4 inches? I mean, cut me a break. But, yeah, push it to Wednesday, see what happens. Then maybe you have, to be honest with you, then maybe you take the Steelers get next game and have them play Monday night, and you take the Ravens next game and you have them play Tuesday night to kind of maybe balance the schedule a little bit in terms of days off. I mean, maybe that's a possibility. Obviously, I'm not involved in the meetings. The only meetings I'm involved in involve Matt and me sleeping through a leadership meeting. That's not funny.
We actually did not have it today.
No wonder you said it was the best Monday of the year.
Hopefully the Eagles don't ruin it.
Oh, you're not going to win this game. Come on. You're about 17 points shy of this group.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.